Hey, everybody. It's Camera Work Podcast. This is John Ricard, and Ray Tamara is here with me.
Hey, thanks for checking us out. And do us a favor and tell your friends, send us questions, get us some feedback so that we can continue to know what you want to hear, and we can serve your audience.
Yeah, you know, it is kind of weird because we do the podcast and we don't get a lot of feedback. I would certainly like that to get more. I got to stop a second. I feel like something is not right audio-wise. Check. Something's not right. Let me try to figure this out. You keep talking for a second. You're number two.
This is Ray Tamara. I'm a working photographer in New York. I share a studio with John Ricard. I work at the hotels usually, the morning
show. Tap your mic a second. Okay, we're getting you there. Keep talking now.
And besides that, I take yoga and jiu-jitsu. I ride a bike because it's warm now. Lately I've been painting a house.
Okay. Let me try my mic. Okay, this is my mic, and I'm talking into my mic, and I'm here now. And talk again, Ray.
Back to painting my house after this, and then baking bread. I learned how to bake bread, so I'm going to try that.
Right. I just still feel like our volumes are lower than... I feel like, okay, let's hopefully, if we're here and I'm talking now, we just buzzed again. The fuck is that? All right, let's just try it and hope.
It's right now
we're staticking.
Hello?
I have like no idea audio-wise what we're supposed to do for that. Like nothing is,
hello?
See, we snapped again. Like every single thing appears to be plugged in and...
Hello.
Right. And I see now we're snapping. Like, I think my mic is disappearing or something. It's like I'm not. We're staticking again. It's good to modify. Nothing appears to be loud. Like, let's put everything back to zero here. And five there. Right? Now we're talking.
Hello.
And hopefully we're okay.
Yes.
Okay, your voice sounds good. Mine sounds a little lower than yours, but... If I chose to turn me up, it wouldn't be here. If I chose to turn me up, I could turn me up on some gain here. And now, this is my voice. Okay. All right. Just talk right into the mic, and let's give it a try. I'm going to leave us synced, because we were synced before, so I'm going to restart the clips. That's recording, and this is recording. So, hopefully this is looking okay. Let's give it a try again.
Trying again.
Our volume a little bit lower. Hopefully we're okay. Okay.
Trying again.
I gotta hope I got the number right on this damn thing. I think it's 15 we're up to. Last time I had to cut the number out because I said it wrong. I hit the wrong number. Hey, everybody. It's Camera Work Podcast number 15. This is John Ricard. And with me is Ray Tamara.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. And definitely check us out. Tell your friends so that we can get some more feedback because we definitely want to know what you want to hear.
Right. You know, it's weird because this is the 15th podcast, and we don't get a lot of feedback. We don't get a lot of emails saying, like, you know, you're crazy about what you said on this topic, or can you guys discuss such and such? And the best thing about mediums like a podcast is the connection you can have with the audience where they're communicating with you. So I would definitely love to see that. It's not like, you know, 10 years ago you're reading a book, you couldn't communicate with the author. Today you can. You might listen to the podcast. If you have a question, you can ask it, and we can answer it. So... definitely, people, please do that.
And you know what's so funny is that I did a job at the Schoenberg, a job with Terrence Jennings, another New York photographer, and a guy named Ty, I don't know what his last name, he shoots for Ebony. He said, right. I like what you're doing with the podcast.
Oh,
I was
cool.
Like, how did you know about the podcast? Oh, I checked John out, and you know,
oh,
I was
that's
like,
cool.
Wow.
Very good. That's good. And you mentioned Terrence, and we're actually trying to get Terrence on a podcast. Every week I ask him, and he's like, yeah, cool, and then somehow it never happened. So. Eventually, we're going to get Terrence there. Let's tilt your mic up a little more. What was the job that you did with Terrence? What was the...
You know what? The job was at the Schoenberg Museum. He's the house shooter there. And it was a tribute or roast to an ad executive named Byron E. Lewis. He's the founder of Uniworld Ad Agency or Uniworld Group.
Right. Okay.
So, it was a paycheck, and it was cool. It was cool, and I'm glad I got the gig.
Right. Right. Sounds good. Okay. But so last week, we didn't have you here. We had a guy named P. Frank Williams here and Medina, my assistant. And I thought that went pretty well. They talked about how you can break into that video field, you know, which I think is kind of interesting. And then for me in the last week, the other thing a little bit interesting was I shot a fashion shoot, just a test, meaning that it's not paid and there's no real client. And it's just a bunch of people trying to collaborate and work together. And I did a Ustream broadcast during that shoot. And I made a point in the Ustream broadcast that I kind of wanted to repeat here, because sometimes, like, when you're filming the shoot, like, you want to just be honest and film the way you really work. But then, like, in the back of your mind, you're kind of thinking of, like, almost like internet trolls. Like, what are people going to say when they watch it? That enters your mind to some degree, and you're, like, wondering, like, are people going to think this? Are people going to think that? Like, it enters your mind. You don't let it dictate the shoot, but it enters your mind a bit. So I tried to make a point in the broadcast that I want to make here, which is, like, if I'm doing, like, a test shoot, a lot of times I will tend to fall back and let the hair and the makeup and styling people really start to run things quite a bit. And I do this on purpose because I find there's so many shoots where I have to be completely in charge. There's no way around it because the client has hired me and they expect me to know everything and I've got to look all confident and I've got to figure out the poses and what we're going to shoot and all of that. But if I'm on a test shoot and I can benefit from, like, a styling person jumping in and giving some poses to the models, I'll absolutely do it. So I actually love that because whatever poses we come up with through the hairstylist or the fashion stylist just becomes another pose that I might use on a different shoot when that person's not there. And I think what happens with a lot of photographers is their ego won't let them step back. They want to look like they know what they're doing. They're in charge. They're in command. And I never have that issue. It's like if you're the fashion stylist and you can come up with some great poses, dude, knock yourself out. Come up with some great poses and let's create better art for everybody. Rather than me try to assert my position as if I'm running everything, so I'm going to pose her in the same pose as I did last week, rather than get a fresh new pose from this guy, it just doesn't make sense to me. But I think a lot of photographers have that ego problem where they can't let go of the control.
I see that. I see that there's definitely, you know what? It's a delicate balance because there is you want the shot. You're in the studio. It's your studio. It's your shoot,
right.
And you're willing to collaborate with people. But what if they overstep themselves?
Right.
And they start dictating the shoot, and they tell you what to do, and they say,
right,
no, don't shoot her this way or erase this image, then what do you say?
Yeah,
to that?
See, I've had something very similar to that, to where what happens with me is when someone starts to do that, the issue for me, and it's different than most people would think. For me, what happens is it's not fun. Then I feel like I'm working, and if I'm working, then I should be getting a paycheck. And I can't call that testing, but if I'm testing, then it should be fun. And it should not feel like work. But yeah, you're completely correct. At the point where someone starts dictating, like, we need these poses, and we need this, and we need that, my brain just goes, this is not fun. And at that point, my own particular personality, rather than really fight and confront them, I'll try to wrap that shoot up as quick as I can. I'm just like, this is not fun. I want to go home. And I'm just at that point in let's get this shoot over with mode. So that's my solution. It's probably not the best solution. But I think the key, though, is not to be afraid of that happening. If it happens, you deal with it. But don't be so afraid that you have to have all that control. And you've mentioned before that I think you're actually good at this too, where you are able to step back in a lot of different situations and let things go the way they're supposed to go and then step in and take command when you need to, rather than feeling like you've got to prove something to everybody in the room. That's not your fight, and it's very often not my fight either.
Right. I've made the mistake on a couple of times, and that's the thing that all photographers and just people in general should realize their mistakes and kind of not repeat them. Like,
right.
So I made the mistake of being too laid back, and I made the mistake of being too micromanaging, and it bit me in the ass, and it blew up in my face. And then you just have to understand how to balance.
Right. Right. I agree with that. I think that's crucial, you know. But anyway, so we did a Ustream broadcast. Now, the last time I did a Ustream broadcast, I promoted it on Ustream, meaning I prepared some banners that were up on the Ustream site for like a week before the broadcast went up. And I spoke to the people at Ustream, and they agreed to, like, tweet about it. That, like, when we went live, Ustream is going to send out a tweet that says, like, John Ricard fashion shoot, tune in. Like, great. So we do it. At the height of the 60-minute broadcast, which you actually filmed, we had 700 people watching it.
Right.
And for me, that's just a ball. Like, we're having fun. And I'm proud of the fact that when we're doing those types of broadcasts, we're never bragging. Like, the tone is not, yo, here we are, John Ricard Studio. You know how we do. This is what we do. You know, got the model here. Like, it's the tone isn't that. The tone is like, hey, what do you want to know? We're going to give you some information. And right. we're going to give you pretty much any information you want. We just right. want to share information, have some fun doing this. So we had 700 views. I was all excited. Then we did the new one last week, and at our height, we had 9 people watching the broadcast. 9. I mean, it was such a drag. It was so disappointing to me. And I was baffled. I'm like, how come we had 9 now and 700 last time? So we did the broadcast. I mean, it's online. You can look it up. I guess the date would be like May 1st or something around that time frame. If you go to Ustream and look for John Ricard, you can find it. And I spoke to Ustream, and she said, the person I connect with at Ustream said, Ustream had another broadcast at the same time, and she thinks that hurt us greatly, that everybody was tuned into whatever the other broadcast is, and they didn't go over to ours when Ustream did tweet it out. And she said to broadcast on weekends is better than weekdays in terms of getting people. So I'm going to do another one, hopefully a week from today. Today is like, what, the 10th or something of May? What's today's day?
I don't even know.
But it's around May 10th today. And it's Mother's Day on 2013. And next Sunday, I'll probably do another broadcast. And hopefully we'll get some people. And it won't be like that. But here's the thing that I thought was mildly interesting. So I got an email from one of the 9 people who tuned into the broadcast. And without giving the person's name, I'm going to read you the email that he wrote and give you my reaction to it. So he says, John, I tried sending you a note through your website. I'm not sure if it went through. So he sent it as a regular email too. It says, I am a rising beauty and fashion photographer, and I recently saw your photo shoot on Ustream. It looked like a great experience that I would love to be a part of. Are you looking for a photo assistant or digital tech? I know my way around the studio fairly well, and this would serve as a great learning experience for me. I'd be happy to come to your studio and talk to you when you are free. Hope to hear from you soon. And he put his name and a link to his site. So I was thinking about that, and you can tell me your take on it, but I'm going to tell you my take on it, okay? Like, what is your initial reaction when you see the email? Any thoughts just jump into your head or anything?
I mean, no, I don't really know. I mean, it's good. It's good that people want to participate. I'm a little bit wary of what the motivation is. Is there something else?
Right. Okay. I'll tell you my thought on it. Okay. I think that type of an email and that approach was correct for 2005. It was correct for 2000. I think it's not correct for 2013. It's not. And I'll tell you why. Because I think the solution today, because the industry keeps changing, the solution today, if he likes my Ustream broadcast, he can go to his own Ustream broadcast. Because we broadcast that from my phone. Like, I didn't use any crazy technology to do it. We had a Wi-Fi connection in the studio, and I'm using an iPhone, and I'm broadcasting right through the phone. And I just told you, I was very honest and candid about it. Because I can hide the number of views on Ustream. I don't have to have that number public on my broadcast. I leave the number public. Hey, the number is what it is. And we had 9 people. I think it actually might have been 11 at one point. But 9 was like the average number of people tuned in. So think about this. Like, so you're a guy who's looking at my broadcast and you're banging down my door going, I want to be a part of what you're doing. I only had 9 people tuned in, dude. And I'm like flattered that you want to be part of it because it's a testament to the fact that we were enthusiastic about the 9 people. In other words, if I had gotten up there and said to myself, we only have 9 people and put on this really boring, flat, dead broadcast, he never would have sent the email. So the fact that he sent the email proves that despite the fact we only had 9 people, that we really did give it 100% for those 9 people. But the point is this, he can do exactly what I did. Whoever this guy is, I guarantee you he could get more than 9 people to tune into his broadcast if he promoted it and tapped into some people who are friends of his or whatever. So in that sense, you don't even need me. You don't. And that's the beautiful thing about today, frankly, is that you don't have to bang down the door of this person and say, hey, choose me, which is a topic we talked about a little bit last week, this idea of he's almost saying to me, hey, select pick me as your assistant. Choose me and help me get on my path to success. Right. And I'm trying to make the point that he can choose himself. Because if you're banging down the door of a guy that's getting 9 views on Ustream, I would submit to you, you can match that or beat that yourself. Right. So what do you need me for? So I think the business model today, really, I don't know if it's business model, but whatever you call it, artistic model, really is to get out there and do your thing, man. If you like my broadcast, hey, watch it every time it comes on. But make that, you should say to yourself, I'm going to go do my own fucking broadcast next week, and I'm going to beat his broadcast. I'm going to get more people, and I'm going to make it more interesting, and I'm going to fix everything I think that he did wrong on his broadcast. Mm-hmm. Rather than thinking, oh, let me contact him and be a part of his. Because you have an iPhone and you have an internet connection. You can do it yourself. And this is in no way an insult to the guy. Like, I'm trying to empower you and saying, like, dude, you don't need me. You can beat me next week and get 18 views, double my 9. I guarantee you can do that. So that's my advice to him. And I think that the book, it was a Seth Godin book. I don't know if I mentioned it with you or with the one last week, called The Icarus Deception. And he talks about selecting yourself, not waiting to be chosen today because the tools are out there. Pick yourself and do your own broadcast and do your own type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's a friend of mine who was talking about that, about publishing a book, a photo book. And with the way things are now, you don't need a publishing house or someone to green light your idea. You can do it yourself. A lot of things you can do yourself, and then you can train yourself, and it may be good or it may be horrible, but you'll learn much. You'll get much more out of it by doing yourself and taking that initiative than having someone, than waiting for someone to choose.
Right.
You choose yourself.
Right. And then the concept that I've read about online is this idea of trying to find 100 people that care about what you do. And if you can't find 100, then you're pitching to the wrong people, or what you do sucks. But trying to find 100 people, excuse me, who care about what you're doing, and that becomes your core, and then you can start building that core to, you know, maybe those 100 tell 10, and boom, now you're up to, I can't do the math, I guess you're up to 1,000 at that point. But that's part of the business model. But I do like when the technology benefits me, though, like the ability that I can do Ustream off my phone, because so many times as all of these changes happen, these things like Instagram and Ustream, sometimes they feel like they hurt me because I can kind of miss the old days. I was thinking how, like, say around like 2002, I would get hired a lot by like Universal Records to take pictures of music videos. And they would send me to like Atlanta, Florida, California, you know, all over the place. They'd send me to go take pictures at the music video. And they would always send a car to take me to the airport. That was standard. And I mean, it's so great at like 4 in the morning when you've got a 6 a.m. flight that you're not worried about driving yourself to the airport or taking a cab, or in my case, very often getting mommy to drive me to the airport. But instead, I can just walk out the door, and then there's this beautiful black car that's freezing cold for some reason, but beautiful black car that just takes you right to the airport, and they pick you up from the airport. I haven't gotten that in years. Like, that kind of thing just disappeared from the industry, correct?
Yeah, video work has disappeared.
Oh, God, I've been hired to take pictures of a music video in at least 3 or 4 years, and that rate was always like $9.50 a day, you know, times 2 days, 3 days. Like, it was, and it was a fun thing. You could resell the pictures through your stock agency. It's a great gig. Completely disappeared. But as things change, I do like when I can find stuff that changes and benefits me, like Ustream. And I was thinking of another one, which is Instagram, because I was trying to find models for a shoot the other day, and I was just thinking how great it was that once I found the girl, rather than say to her, do you have a model mayhem page or do you have model pictures, I was able to just say to these girls, like, do you have an Instagram page? And as soon as you find their Instagram page, you've got like 50 or 60 different photos that this girl has taken of herself in the mirror, that her friend has taken of her. And you can really get a sense of what she looks like, much better than a 20-picture model portfolio that's all retouched. And what it really empowers me to do is I can select which pictures go to my editor. Because, say, for this particular publication, if my editor sees shots where this girl has no top on and she's holding her boobs and she's trying to be sexy, I don't care what she looks like, my editor's not going to take her for a beauty shoot. She's just not. And I'll try to explain to the editor, look, every girl takes that picture. It doesn't mean anything. But she's just like, I don't want her. Whereas if I get access to your Instagram feed and I'm looking at 60 pictures of you, I can pick out the right 10 that will show this editor, this girl does have the look that we need for this particular project. And that's actually a very good thing, because so often, and I'm looking at like Twitter and Instagram with a certain amount of annoyance, and I've talked about that on the podcast before, but I was just thinking of how it benefited me the other day, and I was like glad for it. I was like, wow, this is great that I've got Instagram and I can get the right shots of this girl to show my editor and get her chosen. So that worked out really good, you know. And another example too is, you know, my website, okay, my website is currently hosted by something called a Photofolio. I think I paid $1,000 for the template. It might have been like $1,500. I really don't remember, but it's definitely around a grand. And you pay that and you get the template. And after you buy the template for the website, it's very similar to like Livebooks, just a little bit cheaper. And it gives you the advantage too of they work video better than Livebooks did at the time that I considered Livebooks or a Photofolio. In addition to that, I pay $17 a month to maintain the website. It's a lot of money for like a 5-gallery portfolio that essentially just sits there. And 500 Pics, are you familiar with that site at all?
No.
No, and you're not on there.
No.
Right. Now, 500 Pics charges, it might have been like $99 or $50. It's a very small amount for the year. And they've always done a nice portfolio. Like, it looks really good, their version of a portfolio. They do two things. They do a portfolio site for you, and then they do something that's a little bit like a Facebook where you're throwing up pictures and people can comment and rate and like the pictures and follow you and all of that stuff. And a little bit like Flickr, but the pictures just look way better because it's like not as cluttered and the pictures are bigger. And I like them so much, like, you know, I have two assistants, the other one, Lynette. Like, I told Lynette, like, you have to get on 500 Pics. I'll give you the money. Like, here's the money. Go put up a website on 500 Pics. And it looks a lot like my real site, even though it's $100 instead of like $1,000. And they just rolled out a new portfolio redesign. And I mean, the thing looks so good. It's like super large pictures with really nice, navigation. And they integrate like your Twitter handle and, you know, your Twitter name and all of these things. And I'm looking at 500 Pics and I'm saying, like, it's still in beta. I guess within a month or two, it'll be 100% live. And I'm really considering dropping my real website and only having my portfolio on 500 Pics. And that's incredible to me because the thought of paying $1,000 for my website and $17 a month, that seems completely natural to me. That didn't seem like, oh my God, it's so expensive. That's just what I figure I have to pay as a professional photographer to maintain a website that looks right with good navigation and good images and good functionality. And now I'm entering a time where it looks like I'm going to pay $100 a year and have essentially the same website. So it's another example of like that technology dropping down to like where everyone can afford it. And then it finally benefits me rather than me feeling like, oh, that hurt my industry. Feels like it helps me now because I'm going to pay like $100 a year for my website. You know, what are you doing for a website right now?
I use the Photo Shelter site and I put stuff on there. There's not a strategy that I have with the website. I don't direct clients to it because my business is all self-generated. It's all word of mouth from past clients, and it's definitely slowed down. So it's basically spec work, and spec work means I go out, I shoot pictures of celebs, no one sends me anywhere, and I get those pictures and I post them on my agency, and the agency sells the pictures, and I get a commission every month.
Right. And there is that business model that works for you. Like, I laugh because, you know, there's this school near my neighborhood. It's what they call a Montessori school. It's this kind of specific method of teaching young kids with a kind of different philosophy than a public school system. And it tends to be very expensive. And there's one school in my neighborhood like that. And this woman, she does no advertising. She has no website, nothing. And every year she has more people than she needs. And they're like, there's a waiting list to get in, and if you get a spot and cancel, somebody fills it instantly. So there are those businesses like that who don't have to market in the kind of traditional or classic ways that we do in 2013. And like you're saying, your thing is just kind of self-generated. It's working. You don't necessarily need a website that serves as the portal to get you more business, you know. But for anyone looking for it, I would definitely say take a few minutes and really look at what 500 Pics is doing in the beta of the new themes for the portfolio. It's like I said, I have to wait until it kind of goes live, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to end up having my entire website on a $100 platform a year. And I'm just shocked at that. You know, it's amazing to me, you know. So in other stuff that I thought was interesting in the last couple of weeks, on the Leica blog, I should have sent you a link to this. They had photos from Nikki Sixx. And Nikki Sixx is in the band?
Motley Crue.
All right. Yeah, I was just curious if you knew that.
I followed his blog. It was kind of cool. He shoots a lot of cool stuff. Obviously, he's a very interesting man. He's taken up photography as another artistic impression besides his music.
Right.
And the stuff that he's doing is pretty dead on cool.
Yeah, they had a feature on his heroin pictures. Like, he goes into neighborhoods, and this guy's like a millionaire and super famous. I mean, they first got famous in like 82, so he's got to be really well known. And he goes into neighborhoods with like heroin users, and he's just photographing them. And I just thought it was so fascinating, because we've talked about personal work so much on the podcast. And it's another example of it, because for me, that's not necessarily fascinating. I would shoot heroin users if that door opened for me, yeah. But it's not something that I would wake up in the morning and go like, oh, if I could shoot anything, I would shoot heroin users. Like, but for him, as a former heroin addict, I guess there's still this fascination about that world that in some way he probably still wants to be part of it in some small way. I'm sure he's glad he's not on heroin, but you get what I'm saying. And he gets to go there and photograph it. And it's, again, like we've talked about this, particularly on the episode that had Pete Monsanto on it. I don't know the number of that episode, but if you look up for Pete Monsanto, we talked about how, like, when someone assigns you a job, you know, the pictures, they're not really you. They fit the job. Like you said a few minutes ago, you shot something into Schomburg, and Terrence called you to help him on that job. If Terrence had called me, what I produced and what you produced would be pretty similar, because we were both at the Schomburg. But when Nikki Sixx goes out on the street, and he's got a Leica, he's got the new M now, but he was shooting on the M9 before. But he goes out there with his M, and he's got the M monochrome. He's shooting something that's so different than what you would shoot or what I would shoot, because, like I said, heroin users are not in my top 10 of what I would want to shoot, and probably not in yours either, right?
No.
Right, and I, you know, we say it's one of the themes of the podcast, really, about finding your voice, but again, anyone kind of confused about what should you be doing on personal work, go look at what Nikki Sixx does with heroin users on the Leica blog. You get a perfect example of what I'm talking about. That's something that he cares about, and he takes us into that world, and that is fascinating. When I look at those pictures, he's taking me into that world of heroin users, and it's fascinating to see it because I'm not part of that world and I don't know anything about it. And he's doing the right thing. He's like, I respect that photography more than a guy that's just taking assignments, correct? And just shooting, you know, like I always say, Rihanna at some perfume unveiling. I respect what Nikki Sixx is doing because he's really doing something important to him.
I respect both of them. I respect both of them because, you know, I mean, it's important to have your personal work, but it's also important to work and get paid.
Yeah.
and that's just as important.
Right, because you can't buy the new cameras if you don't get some money somewhere.
You can't have a lot of things. You can't.
Yeah, but the new camera is the most important thing. And, you know, we talked on a podcast before about this Beyonce situation where, you know, she did the Super Bowl, and I guess some people photographed it, you know, with permission, and then they produced some pictures that were not flattering to her. She looked very muscular and manly, and it became a big joke on the blogs, like, look at how muscular and manly Beyonce looks. And you and I had this debate on the podcast about, you know, was the photographer right? And I said, no, he's not, because I feel if you have permission from the artist, then you're kind of part of this unspoken agreement to make the artist look good. If you snuck in, do whatever you want to do, but the moment you're part of the system, you know, we're all working together. You can't do something embarrassing with the artist. And I think you took a slightly different position, though.
Yeah, no, because I'm not part of the system. Like, you know, I don't get approved to cover these things. I have to sneak in. I have to, you know, lie and cheat and steal to get these action shots. And I remember there was a long time ago where I was in 4040, and I see Beyonce come in, and I raise up the camera to take a shot, and she says no, and I didn't take the shot.
Right.
And that's fine. And that's fine, because I would take her anyway, but I'm not part of the system. I'm outside her house, I'm outside the restaurant, and I'm outside the places where she frequents or the hotels where she's at. So if she looks busted, then that's what the shot that I want.
Right.
If she makes a fashion mistake, then that's her fault.
Right.
If she comes out with makeup, then she knows better. If she comes out with food on her, you know, chin, then that's the shot that I have to take. And I have no problems taking it, and I'm not part of the system, so I don't subscribe to making her look beautiful.
Right. Yeah, again, if you're not part of the system, fine. Plus, again, and I've said this many times, is that you can't blame the photographers when there are outlets who are going to buy the photos. You shoot what you know is going to sell. Right. If people said to you tomorrow, we are not going to run unflattering pictures of any artist, you would stop shooting it. You're shooting what you know is going to create a right. good paycheck. So anyone who hates the paparazzi, blame the people buying the photos. They're part of a system. They're part of a whole other system of making people look bad. So don't just blame one part of that chain. But the thing I thought was interesting is Beyonce banned professional photographers from the whole tour. For the new tour, they have one guy shooting it, one professional, and every day after that city show, they release like 4 or 5 photos, and that's it. And they let the audience shoot it. And I was looking on one forum on LinkedIn, and I'm sure it's being repeated on other forums, but a couple of guys were trying to say like, oh, this is so silly, you know, she's got the fans shooting it. And I totally disagree. The fans are doing a fine job. They're doing completely fine. You give me a girl in the second row with an iPhone who shoots 200 pictures at that show, her best 3 shots are going to look just as good as a professional photo, particularly when professionals are only shooting the first 2 or 3 songs these days. And when I shot Beyonce's show like 3 or 4 years ago, we shot 60 seconds. It wasn't even a whole song. They said, like, we're going to tell you when to start shooting and when to stop. And it was 60 seconds. That was it. And I think I had your lens for that, didn't I? Wasn't that the one? I think I borrowed your 300 for that.
I shot her far away. It was like probably in another area code in another city.
Right. We were at the soundboard and it was 60 seconds. And we did different shows, but I'm pretty sure I borrowed your lens for that. But I just think it's funny that I think you really don't need the pros. I think the amateurs in the audience can shoot the concert. Because again, as we said many times, once everything is all set up, anybody can push the button. So when you've got 100 monkeys in the audience, and I'm only calling it monkeys because it's the analogy about the monkeys with the typewriters, 1,000 monkeys typing away the typewriter, eventually somebody's going to produce Shakespeare. That's what's happening in the audience. You've essentially got 1,000 monkeys in the audience, city after city after city, and collectively the tight edit from that tour, from the 1,000 monkeys in the audience, is going to produce some fantastic photography, certainly better than a bunch of pros in shooting where how Beyonce had it set up from the soundboard, shooting 60 seconds. I mean, come on.
And, I mean, at the end of the day, it's good to be a photographer and being that photographer.
Oh, if you're him, that's great, yeah.
But you're also, if you take that job, you know that you can't put up any unflattering photos. You know that Beyonce owns those photos, so you're giving up all the rights to the photo, and you're just taking a check.
Right, right.
And a check is good.
Right, yeah, of course, you're the only guy. And it's a lot of fun. It's kind of like when I'm at BET, I'm the only one shooting most of the time. It's great. There's nobody in your way.
The check isn't good.
That's not a good check, though, unfortunately.
No, the Beyonce check may not be good either.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
who knows?
I know the BET one isn't exactly where I would like it to be, but hey, you know, I can't complain. I'm shooting and making some money off of it, okay? So did you see the Photoshop new pricing thing? There's been a whole lot of talk about that. And there's one little element that's missing from the conversation to me that no one has mentioned, but did you see anything about that?
I mean, I know that I think that you get the full suite online and you pay like $10 a month.
No, it's way higher than that. And, you know, we should research this, but it's higher than 10 a month. It could be as high as like 30 a month or something. I think it's 20, like your first year, and after that it goes up. It's a higher fee than something you can just kind of forget about. Like, I pay $10 a month to Dropbox, and I don't really think about it. I never really sit and go, do I need Dropbox at that amount? Am I just going to $10 a month? Who cares? But the Photoshop is a higher fee, something that you would sit and go, is this worth it? And, you know, I'm not so sure on it. But the weird thing to me is everyone acts like they have to upgrade. Like, I looked at it, and I went, like, I'm on Photoshop, I think it's 5, and I don't even know what else I need from Photoshop that 5 doesn't give me. So when they put out Photoshop upgrades, I don't even care. Because does anybody exploit all of Photoshop? I mean, there's so much in Photoshop that...
Yeah. I mean,
who's really going, oh my God, I've exhausted everything I can do in Photoshop?
I mean, I don't know. I don't use Photoshop. And luckily, I use Lightroom. Right. I do upgrade to Lightroom. Sometimes I don't really think it's necessary. I know that they have that same price. That pricing structure that I saw was similar to something with Microsoft Office, where Microsoft Office is something that I use sporadically. I had it. I had the Windows version. I'm on a Mac now, and it's $9.99. And I was like, wow, you can either buy it for $130 or you can spend $9.99, which is like $120,
right.
And then you have to buy it again the next year, and then you
right.
have to buy
keep
it again
going.
The next
right.
year. So, you know, they have you locked in as a perpetual customer.
Right. Yeah, which is weird because you don't own anything in a way. You're
right.
like you're like renting it, and it is a little bit weird. But
right.
again, I think for a lot of people, maybe just don't upgrade. Just
right.
maybe don't need the upgrade. And Lightroom is a little different for me, at least, because I shoot quite a bit with that Leica M9, and in my opinion, the files are just not good. They're not like a Nikon where you can just pull up the shadows or you can adjust them. The files are much more delicate. They're just not a high-quality file, in my opinion. So when I read about new Lightroom adjustments, whatever you call it, upgrades to the program, and sometimes on the Leica forum, people mention that it's processing Leica files better. So that'll make me say, okay, maybe I'll get the next Lightroom, but as far as when I'm shooting my Nikon stuff, there's really nothing in Lightroom that I need that it doesn't do right now, and I think I'm on 3.
You're on 3. I'm on 4. There's a 5 beta that's out right now that I tried, but I couldn't get the... Because it's a beta, I couldn't sync the catalog, so I just had to stop using it because the catalog is important to me in Lightroom 4. So I'm just going to stick with Lightroom 4 until it's not beta, and then I'll pay for the upgrade.
Right. And, you know, you and I was explaining to you one time this theory that I had about software piracy, that because I think that's really one of the reasons that Adobe is doing it, is because they realize by doing a subscription model, they can greatly reduce the piracy. And there was a time with Photoshop, I mean, my God, it was so pirated, it was unbelievable. And it's such like an open secret, like there are no photographers who feel ashamed to pirate Photoshop, or at least a few years ago it wasn't. Like everybody would just go like, well, I'll get your copy of Photoshop. Nobody ever looked at it like, hey, this is wrong and we're image making professionals. It was just like completely normal, you know, just like it wasn't even wrong or whatever. But And I certainly understand it because, you know, it's $600, people are bitching about paying it. But I would submit that another way to look at it is, I told you one time that I heard this Jay-Z song. The song was called 30. And he was trying to talk about the difference from when he was 20 to when he was 30. So he was trying to say things. Really, you have to hear the song because I'm not going to do Jay-Z justice in this podcast. But he was trying to make the point like, when he was young, he thought it was cool to go and buy out the bar. Go to the bar and pay for everybody's drinks, and he was the man. Whereas now at 30, he looks at it like, I own the bar. And that's what's actually cool. And how when he was 20, it was cool to have a gun, because you're the man, you're walking in a club with a gun. And now he's going like, I don't have one gun on me, because that's actually cooler to not have a weapon. You know, and he talks about how he used to go to the club to look all hard, and now he goes to talk to these classy girls. So he was trying to talk about like a higher level of cool. You know, the difference between, like, is it cool to have a big stack of cash? Like, in one way it is. Yeah, you got stacks of $100 bills or whatever rolled up in your pocket. Okay, but the guy with like a black card, maybe that's actually really cool. You follow that other level, like a Donald Trump versus a rapper flashing jewelry who's 18, like Donald Trump doesn't flash chains, and he's got more money than those guys. So it's that other level, and I would submit that it could feel really cool as a photographer to be like, yeah, I got all the crack software. I got a boy, he can hook me up with Photoshop, and he can hook me up with Final Cut Pro. And yeah, you're cool when you do that, but imagine having that other level of cool, that other level where you're booking jobs at such good rates that you're not really blinking at the idea of paying $600 for Photoshop. That's not really affecting you because you're billing jobs, you know, where your net profit is the $12,000 range, the $22,000 range, the $44,000 range. You're booking jobs that are paying money that you're like, I'm not going to stand here and fucking try to figure out how to crack with a key generator Photoshop. I'm just going to buy Photoshop. And that's really where you want to be. That's what you want to aspire to, that level of, you know, where you're so successful, you can afford Photoshop and not have to crack it. It's just another way of looking at it, the same way Jay-Z in that song is trying to say to these guys, like, hey, how about the idea that you don't have any cash in your pocket? You think Obama's walking around with big stacks of $100 bills rolled up? He's, you know, a super powerful man, but he doesn't have cash on him. And that is like the next level that you have to be able to see. So I would submit that to photographers that are pirating software, that maybe it's cool to not pirate it if you can look at it from a different perspective, you know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, yeah. At the end of the day, just work more, get the money, and pay it. It's a tax write-off.
Right, right. Now, the last time we spoke to you, too, you had injured the shoulder in jiu-jitsu, right? Did that heal? Are you back to jiu-jitsu? Are you able to work properly now? Or what?
Yeah, I'm working properly. It was a blessing in disguise because it allowed me to really think about my health and then also to think about just how I can sustain, because the stuff that I do is very physical. What's eye-opening is that I'm 44 years old.
Yeah, no, you're old. 44,
something like that. I worked at this job on Monday. It was the biggest job in New York. It's called the Met Gala. And all
that.
The A-list, I shot it from across the street. So when I had the Beyonce shot and she was walking up the staircase, I was across Fifth Avenue with 80 to 400. And I was trying to zoom in because I didn't bring my 300 because I didn't think that shot was available. I'm going to do that next time.
But you have a 500 also,
right? I got the 500, but I didn't bring it out because I didn't have a car. So having that 500, having the extra lenses, if you don't have a car, then you're just strapping that on your back. And that's like, you know, luggage. And you can't have luggage working on the street.
Right.
So case in point, I got shot a whole bunch of Beyonce, Katie Holmes, Renee Zellweger, Sienna Miller, Elizabeth Banks. It's the biggest... biggest event in New York with A-list actresses, A-list celebrities in fashion. And you know you're going to make some money. I know I'm going to make some money. But I started, I woke up at 5 o'clock and I had to wait for a repair.
You mean 5 a.m.?
5 a.m.
Okay.
Because the internet was down and I knew that this is the biggest day in my life.
Right.
So I needed to get that internet up. So I called the Comcast and I had them come out and they didn't fix it. And I was like, what? That's going to put a damper on me. I'm going to have to work on something else. Case in point, I was working from 5 a.m. I was working 24 hours.
Right.
I finished the job at the Standard Hotel. It was 5 a.m. I went back to a diner because I couldn't go back home because no internet. Can't follow my picture. It ruined me for the whole week.
Right.
Like, I'm 44 years old. I work 24 hours. I was up 24 hours. How many hours I worked, who knows. But it just physically depleted me.
Right.
I was almost unconscious for the next 3 days.
Wow.
And
but it goes to that point that I made when we had Medina on, who's my assistant. She's like 20 or something, 21 or whatever. And I was trying to make that point that, yeah, you could look at someone more established than you. Like, she could look at me and think, oh, he has all the advantages because I've got all this gear and I've got a studio and I've got a lot of connections. But I could look at her and say, well, you've got advantages I don't have, because at her age, she could probably manage that 24-hour straight working and then sleep for 4 hours and get right back out there and do it again. Mm-hmm. Because it's very different when you're 21. It's totally different. So as you get older, and if you're not maintaining your body, that kind of stuff's going to get more and more and more difficult. But you're doing a lot now, right? Like, you're doing yoga,
I'm doing yoga. I'm doing yoga. I'm doing jiu-jitsu. I like the yoga because it's allowing me to access another a relaxation system. Like, yoga is basically meditation. You're doing physical poses. But if you're breathing right, then you just almost like out-of-body experiences.
Yeah. See, I haven't gotten to that point. I do yoga. Like, I try to do it once a week, this like hot yoga. I never feel that I just feel like this hurts, this is difficult, and are we halfway through the class yet so I can get out of here?
I like yoga. I've always liked physical practices like salsa dancing, surfing, hiking, just anything to get me out of nature, get me active. And like I talked about in the past podcast, I've been eating better. What I wanted to ask you, and what I wanted to talk about to the audience, is that besides, I had a lot of downtime, so I was watching videos. So I was watching, I'm a subscriber, yearly subscriber to Lynda. And Lynda is a site, lynda.com. It's a site that has video tutorials. And I just saw a David Hobby episode on lynda.com talking about Flash. And then there's another lady that I was talking about.
What made you watch that, though? Like, isn't that kind of stuff we know already at this point?
And that's what I wanted to ask you, is that this is stuff that I review because I know it. I know it in my head, and I know how to fix exposure, and I know how to do things, but I don't necessarily know how to teach it. And if you know it, how to teach it, then you're that much more effective because then you know it better.
Well, teaching and learning are very connected. And you're talking to someone who taught high school for 11 years. Mm-hmm. I taught 11 years public high school, so I definitely have a teaching background. But teaching and learning are very connected. You have to organize things a certain way in order to teach them. And it's a big part of learning. It really, really is. And I know I teach jiu-jitsu a little bit, you know, in Brooklyn with a friend of mine, and I've done a ton of photography instruction. And yeah, teaching is it's a skill separate from a lot of things to be a good teacher. And I would only say part of it is, again, dropping yourself out of the equation. The biggest mistake I think people make when they give a public speech or when they give a teaching thing is they're thinking about themselves. The typical person who gives a speech says, okay, first thing, what am I going to wear? I don't want to look like an ass. Okay, I'm going to put on a suit. I'm going to match my shoes and my tie or whatever. And I need to come up with a joke so they think I'm funny. And let me make sure that my presentations look good so they know I know how to work PowerPoint or Microsoft Keynote. Not Microsoft, Mac Keynote. And, you know, let me make sure I've got some jokes and make some references to people that I know. And the whole thing is focused on himself. You know, and I'll make sure everybody knows that I know a lot of stuff. And, like, you may have encountered this. Like, if you're in, say, a jiu-jitsu class and, like, a brown belt has to teach for that day, he's going to give you the hardest class you've ever had in your life because he wants to show he's hard. So he's going to make you do 3 times the amount of push-ups you normally do and 10 times as many sit-ups. And all he's thinking about is himself. But what you have to do is say, what does the audience want to know? Mm-hmm. So if you're giving that speech, you just think, what do they want to know in the audience? Okay, it's an education thing. They want to know how to control a classroom. Well, they want to know how to make a flash, do what I need it to do. And that's where you should approach it from. And I know, like, with all of my YouTube videos, what I was most proud of was we had no introductions. Like, my videos would go, hey, it's John Ricard. Today we're going to talk about perspective. Now, the first thing you need to know, and in, like, 30 seconds, I was giving you information. Like, you'd learn stuff because all I thought about was what do you need to know. I didn't think about what do I want to put across, like, oh, here's my logo, and here's how cool I am. I just ignored all of that. So I think that's a part of it. And the other part of it is how you structure the information. And some people are really bad at that. Like, there's famous names, and you try to watch what they're teaching. It's horrible.
Yeah, I've sat through that. I wanted to ask you is that do you find that these things are helpful in your career? Because I know that this is stuff that I know. David Hobby, the stuff that he's covering, is I know it, but I don't necessarily know. What I got from it is the key from this episode was the interaction with it. He did a photo shoot, a studio shoot with a model.
Right.
And what he tried to do was be very personable. And I know that you've talked about that, being very personable. Creating a rapport with the person
absolutely.
You're shooting. Whereas when I'm in the street in my job, there is no rapport. They could care less. They could either I don't say hi to them. If I'm shooting Sarah Jessica Parker, I'm a block away with a 300, just banging it out.
Right.
And hopefully they don't see me so that I can get more interesting shots or I can get more mess ups.
Right. But this is why I would be suggesting to you then you absolutely should be practicing the exact opposite of that in the studio because you have the location, right? Ray shares the studio with me. You share the place that we're talking in right now. You got as many days as you need here and you've got the opportunity to build that. And just like with the yoga, like there's no reason for you to do yoga other than like to just make yourself better. And I would be suggesting, you should be working on those areas that are weaker for you, like dealing with that one-on-one rapport with the model. And the best thing about studio is you can create your own world. Like, again, if I'm doing a test shoot particularly, that makeup girl is there because I want her there. And that hair guy is there because I want him here. And I want to work with this stylist. And I've chosen these models. It's very different from a job. And I create the mood. And you've been on a ton of my shoots. Yeah. I'm running around. I'm doing card tricks. And I'm listening to Tupac. And it's John Ricard's Little Planet. I'm in my perfect little world that I think is the way things should be. And it's a fantastic thing that you can create. And then you can set the tone of how you want it to be. And some photographers are very snooty, like, oh, you need to pose better. And then there's people like me just having fun and laughing and not having the ego. So I think the more of that you can do, the better. But as far as instructional content, I still watch a lot of instructional videos in a lot of categories. I think the only thing that changed to me over the years was I kind of reached a point where I felt I knew enough about the technical lighting and stuff that I started shifting to something like a David Duchemin, if that's how you pronounce it. You know, his Creative Live on Vision was so good to me. It was the best video I'd seen in years, and it was very subtle. And it didn't give you a technique to walk out the next day and go, oh, put the light here, the way Joe McNally will break down every light position. But I just think I've got a lot of that knowledge. So if I can find stuff that's more like mental, then that's what I like. And my current favorite things, and I've probably mentioned this, is if you go to YouTube and you look for RSD Free Tour. RSD stands for Real Social Dynamics. And Free Tour are videos from their free presentations. Has absolutely nothing to do with photography. These guys are talking 100% about picking up women. That's their topic. But it's social skills, social dynamics, and it's applicable to any social dealings that you have, whether it's your wife or your job or trying to pick up girls. And I find stuff like that fascinating. I can listen to hours of that, and it gives me a lot of insight. And that improves my photography, even though it's not as technical as, oh, put the light here, you know. And the only reason I mentioned the thing with David Hobby is I just think, I don't know, I think, like, because he took a kind of limited thing, like, I'm just going to talk about small flashes. To me, that's a kind of finite piece of information. And then once you've told it, like, well, aren't we done? Is there anything else you can tell us about small flashes at this point? We get it. You have a small flash, and you put this modifier on it and shoot. Whereas other people who've taught, like Lindsay Adler, who you've met, you know, she teaches on, like, retouching and fashion and, like, nude photography, like, 20 different topics. You know, you just have, like, more places to go in the teaching, you know? So that's how I look at it. But I do a lot of self-education, you know, and a lot of jiu-jitsu self-education. I watch Marcelo Garcia videos, Eddie Bravo videos constantly.
Yeah, you know,
every
what
day or two.
You know what's interesting is that I had to, and it's still, I haven't done it. I have to turn in a resume.
Right.
For myself.
For what?
Because I'm thinking about getting into filmmaking, so I want to, I have to turn in a resume to qualify. And I'm like, how do I write a resume? For me, because I've been working for myself for the past 12 years.
Right.
So that's a body of time. And there's no boss. There's not all these things where there's no goals. I make a living.
Right.
And there's not any, like, there's any, what is it, benchmarks or milestones that I can say, oh, I did this and I did this.
Yeah, that's hard.
So I'm looking for ways to how to, how to quantify 12 years of my life.
No, I don't know.
I put it on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
So that's been like, wow, what am I going to do? But
I haven't done a resume in years either. Like, if you show it to me, I'll look at it. But I might be giving you that old school resume that people don't do anymore. I'm surprised you even need it, though. I'm surprised they don't want, like, a reel or something along that line.
Yeah, I mean, you know? Because who knows? I don't have a reel either.
Right. Well, yeah, that I would think you need, though. But I know LinkedIn, like the way they set up your profile on LinkedIn, because it's so job-oriented, they walk you through, excuse me, a little bit of that where they're like, what was the position? What did you do? Who did you work with? What were your duties? So it's a little bit like a resume template. Maybe that would work for you, because then you can look at it and see, like, well, what's missing and what's here, and you can move items up and down on LinkedIn. Maybe that'll work for you.
But you're your own boss, so you work by yourself.
Yeah, but you can still mention, like, your duties, I guess. You know, it's a lot of stuff, you know, like doing the billing and the marketing and trying to get shoots to happen. You know, it's a lot of stuff that we're doing still.
Yeah. You know, just like with photography, I know that for me, if you told me exposure, how do you correct this or what's the, I don't know how to teach it. I just know, I just know what dials to put.
Right.
And then, okay, I'm there. And then I'm back to shooting.
Right.
So
for me, the teaching has never been hard, though. I don't know. Just like probably 10 years in the classroom that, you know, that made that easy for me, you know, to do it that way. You know, but as we wrap, anything coming up on your end that you're looking forward to shooting wise or release wise or anything in terms of gear or anything like that?
No, I'm looking forward to seeing Star Trek Into Darkness next week. I'm looking forward to doing more yoga. I'm looking forward to shooting, but nothing big. And maybe, I'm going to go to Curacao.
What is that?
It's a vacation. So in the next 3 weeks, I'm going to go to Curacao, which is where it's a Dutch colony off of South America, and I'm going to spend 5 days there.
Wow. Are you bringing a camera? What camera do you bring for that?
I don't know. I didn't bring a camera last time. Maybe the D90. Maybe I'll shoot video.
No, you need to get... What you should do for that trip, because it's 5 days, is go buy, like, if nothing else, get the Fuji X100S, because everybody loves it. No one's ever used that camera and didn't like it. Or take your Leica. Ray has a Leica M9 that, like, if you take the card out of the camera and look at the pictures, they're like, the one card has pictures that are like a year old because he's never made it through one whole card on the camera. It's unbelievable, right? Am I right or wrong?
No. I mean, I'm embarrassed to say that you're absolutely right. Yeah. It's overwhelming for me.
Yeah.
Like, I can afford the camera, but I just get... Right. Intimidated by
it. But it's funny because, like, on your card, like, it's 100 pictures, right? You see all four seasons. Like, there's, like, Christmas pictures. There's pictures at the beach. It's, like, 100 pictures is all he shot in a year on a camera. And the camera's in beautiful condition and stuff. But the point I'm trying to make is bring a particular tool on that trip that you don't normally use, like that Leica M9. You have a 35mm 1.4. It's an amazing lens. I got the F2. You got a better lens than me. And just bring that one lens and one body, no flash, and use that for 5 days. Or pick up like an XE1 Fuji or the X100 and sell it after the trip. You'll lose like $150 after 5 days. You know, you could sell that back without too much of a loss. It'd be like you rented the camera. Right. And just play with that. But don't bring the Nikon. It's just going to put you back in that frame of mind of what you do every day.
I wouldn't bring the Nikon. I wouldn't want to bring that the Leica. Because traveling with such an expensive...
Nah, you just keep it on the whole time. Like, my rule, because I'm always so afraid of losing it, I mean, because I know me. You know how forgetful I can be about stuff. Like, but I literally will put that camera on when I leave the door, and it will not leave my neck or my arm the entire day. If I'm driving, I keep it on my shoulder. When I get to a restaurant, I keep it on my shoulder while I'm eating, or I'll unbuckle my belt. And I put the belt through the strap, and then I'll put the camera on the table because I am very paranoid about leaving it, not just because it's expensive, but I know my personality. I can be sort of absent-minded or forgetful because I'm focused on, like, answering some text message and then walk out and forget the camera. So, but I find it's very doable. You can just leave that on your shoulder the entire day and never take it off. And it's not that big of a problem. I mean, you like to do a lot of physical stuff. It could get in the way if you're trying to hike and stuff on a trip, but... If not, like I said, pick up an X100S. Everybody loves that camera. Shoot with that for 5 days, and that might work out good for you. When you come back, just sell it. It's a hot camera. You can certainly lose $150, and someone will probably buy it. You know, a 5-day-old camera. I wouldn't return it. I think that'd be tacky, personally. So, all right? All right, but we're going to wrap here. Again, as Ray pointed out at the beginning, give us some feedback. You know, it's, again, not like when you're reading a book 5 years ago and you couldn't talk to the author. If you like the podcast, just... drop us a line. We'd love to hear from people and talk about some things that you want to hear about. If you want to find me, check my Instagram, which is John Ricard, JohnRicard. I post a decent number of shots there, most of them from the Leica, and that's about it. And look on 500 Picks, because I'll probably have a new site up there pretty soon, and hopefully it's going to look really good. All right? Ray, where do they find you?
They find me in the streets of New York because I'm going to be working more because I need more money. I haven't been working lately, and the sales have been dipping. It's important to get out there. You're probably going to see me more. You're going to see me later, and I'm in New York working.
Right. Sounds good. There we go. All right. Thank you, guys.